Hello, this is Hit Pause, a podcast made in San Francisco with more questions than answers. Hello, and welcome to Hit Pause, episode 11. It's been a little while since I recorded. I took 1 week of hiatus just to reflect, to pause, to think through all the events of the world, the current events which are accelerating in this weird sense of time, which is slowing down with every day looking like the previous one and probably looking at the next day, and yet there is change, yet there is anger, yet there is finally people moving in the streets and demonstrating and going beyond hitting the like button online. It's been an intense 2 weeks for news of the world, for the news of the health of the world. The conversations we had in the last episode about the need for a moral compass in social media seem to be bubbling up as a topic, obviously, and this question of how do we slow down the virality of mediocre information, the virality of manipulating information, the virality of ideas which are toxic to the mere fabric of our democracy. I am continuing to update my website at uteza.com/podcast with more and more articles as they come in. And what strikes me as I'm doing so is that the themes continue to fit within the framework that we have been exploring together about the evolution of media, about the social media and its influence on the ways that we communicate, the ways that we interact, and the ways that social media in itself is a tautologic system. We talk about social media on social media. And so it means that this fourth pillar of our systems of governing, systems of governance, has to become self-regulated. We approach the end of season one, and I reflect upon this first season of this personal experiment, sharing my thoughts through a podcast, through voice. I also reflect on my own usage of social media and media and being bombarded by messages all the time. In the last episode, I called for a reflection on how we as a society use media and what each one of us individually has to think about. And obviously that goes for me as well. So I've been looking, observing maybe in those 2 weeks, the onslaught of messages that I receive all the time at work, emails, chat messages on the work chat channel, texting, Instagram, Facebooking, Facebook Messenger, personal emails, television, the cell phone. And when you combined all those different channels and at least three screens type, the phone, the desktop, the laptop, the TV, not to count the fifth screen that will soon one day arrive in our internet-connected cars, the media time is all around us. We become media. We become a media object. And I find it interesting, always looking at the semantics, that the European privacy regulation talks of us as a data subject. I actually think that we are more a media subject in the true sense of the term. And when you look at the time we spent on all the screens, I think that, yes, addiction builds out. I think that our brains are changing. Our ways of interacting, of being more susceptible to reactions, a reactive temperament, a always alert, always on edge, is being shaped and baked by media and that and those media channels that surround us. How could it not be otherwise? And what is fascinating to me is that the speed at which the human brain can be rewired is, frankly, in a human lifetime, fairly fast. 10 years ago, we did not imagine or see, or maybe we foresaw, the changes that our brains of people in my generation would go through. And yet we are also raising young brains, the brains of young adults, the brains of teenagers, the brains of kids. Our new brains in a way that we do not probably fully understand yet. I really believe, and we'll explore that in the second season, in the concept of imprint. Imprinting a human brain from the early age of a baby into young childhood, childhood years, young teen years, and the teenage years. And the plasticity of the brains of kids has taught us that ultimately, when technology changes, it's the human interface that changes, meaning by that, it is the human that changes. Steve Jobs at Apple taught us that lesson brilliantly by showing us that the thumb, the finger, the index on your iPad was the next level of interface. Amazon is teaching us that voice is the next frontier in man-machine interface. Talking to the computer, having the computer understand you deeply and understanding the nuances of what you're saying is up there. So what does it do to our brain? Well, our brain adapts. When you look at the social media as well, we adapt to and expect constant interruptions, constant intervention of the outside world upon us. And on my website, you will find dozens of resources of studies that have studied that phenomenon. The scientists have ways to analyze it. They have ways to design psychological experiments that prove what we know in our gut, what we know intuitively, is that new technologies, new social media is addictive. We depend on it. We develop anxiety when we don't check the phone. And again, I've mentioned this in a couple of episodes. The fear of missing out, FOMO, has been a design point of many of mobile apps, social apps, precisely in that search for a virality coefficient which is more than one. Find one study referenced on my website particularly interesting, where they actually show and prove that the mere presence of a mobile phone on the table during the experiment about human attention, the mere presence of that phone is sufficient to distract the subject of the experiment. Try to have a conversation with another human being without the presence of a mobile phone. That's a very different conversation than if you have one or two mobile phones on the table and not far out. So distraction, attention, quality of interface, all of those are intrinsically shaping and reshaping how the human brain, how our psychology as a species is changing. Speed and perception of speed is also changing. You ask a question to a search engine on your phone, on your computer, and you get the answer, what you think is the answer, right away. And therefore, we think that's it, we're done. We have gotten the answer. The machine has spoken. Well, the machine has returned a result on the basis of a certain algorithm that has been manipulated by someone who paid for that manipulation. And therefore, I would argue that the real work just begins. And yet, we forget that. And so the machines are now designed by other brains, by other humans, to arguably influence us. It is not the original design, mind you. But the way that the medium is shaped on a search engine, there is a first page and a second and a third and a fourth. So the container, to go back to our concepts of the beginning of the season, the container is such that it shapes the content that it transmits. And therefore, there is a direct correlation between how the receiver of that content is going to react behave. And so that means that when we apprehend or expect or addictively expect a certain speed of response, our view of the world changes, because now everything has to happen really fast if we don't think further. And what strikes me now is that when you look at the beginning of this COVID-19 crisis and the time that it will take for medicine and scientists to come up with a science-based solution, we are finding ourselves at one of the largest hiatus or chasm between the human time, which expects answers in the immediacy, and the science time, which needs time. I remember my parents telling me when I was a kid, they both were in the medical sector, in medicine, we have to give time to time. And of course, as a young teenager, you do not want to hear that because you're built for impatient. But we are in the same situation right now. As a society, we're expecting to be able to find the answer. We hear on media, TV, that how come we don't have a vaccine? Well, it takes years to understand a new virus. It takes years to develop a stable set of techniques, tools, testing, reactive antibodies, and understanding what is really going on. And the political time is changing as well, because people are influenced by social media, this advent of this new container, and politicians are trapped. they're trapped between the time of science, and they're trapped between the time of the mobile phone. And the clarity of thought, the clarity of explanation of the difference between the two, and giving and reconnecting humans with the sense of a time that passes more slowly in science, is the political challenge of this COVID crisis. So we are suffering that hiatus, and we will pay with it. We'll pay for it because precisely we are not articulating in the political sphere that difference clearly enough. I was thinking, reflecting, looking at over the past 12 days or so that I haven't recorded a podcast episode, all the methods that the technology companies delivering us those experiences have evolved over time. I sometimes write articles on medium.com, and they started being one of the first few ones, social media companies, that helps people publish their thoughts to actually calculate an estimated time for reading the article. And that was striking to me. That probably happened, if my memory is right, about 5-6 years ago. And it was an important moment because it actually meant that to grab the attention of the reader, they wanted to give that reader the expectation of how long it took to read that article. And the reader could decide, oh, 3 minutes is too long, I don't have time for that. The article, mind you, might be deep, insightful, intelligent, funny, a good story, a good content. And yet, 3 minutes is no longer what we have, so we move on. This article, 2 minutes, okay. 1 minute, okay. 1 minute, I have 1 minute. 5 minutes, forget it. When I'm writing on there, I never care about how long it takes to read my article because it's not my point. But that was a striking moment, and now I'm seeing more and more of publishers and websites provide that measure of estimated length time when you read an article on the web. I obviously know, and from my work in the advertising space, that advertisers have perfected the art of tracking, measuring the drop-off of the number of people watching advertising or a video, depending on whether you insert the advertising at the beginning of the video, in the middle of it. If it's in the middle, should it be 5 minutes after the start of the video? 15 minutes, should the advertising insertion be 15 seconds, 30 seconds? Are we dropping off more people if it's 30 seconds, or is it 7 seconds? What can we do with 7 seconds of advertising insert? All of that is tracked, measured to try to understand the optimum balance of advertising dollars with that attention time that is now counted in seconds. And all of that machinery is surrounding us, whether we perceive it, pay attention to it or not. I wonder how parents who are raising kids today are facing that world of thinking around social media and the use of media. There is obviously, it's impossible to imagine depriving kids today from this because they also live in their world and with their friends at school, were exposed to TV, phone. I remember the pressure of my godchild, who, when she received her first cell phone, ended up spending time and money for 3,000 text messages the first month. So that media container is surrounding us and thinking about how we are object and subject of this new world is key. It's a dialogue with between parents and kids. I myself, looking at what I share, what I repost, I always try to repost with some semblance of a commentary. Sometimes I don't have time either, and I will post a vignette, I will post an image with just a funny line, as I did yesterday, and don't have time for adding much value. Where I do better is on deciding not to repost something. The censorship reflex is still fairly strong in me, and I try to pay attention to the filtering out of noise or manipulative content. And it is that introspection that I want to talk about in a few minutes in the second part of our episode today. And now, let's go to a short break to hit pause, reflect, or just continue. And welcome back to the second part of this episode as we prepare to close on season one. We just talked about the methods of social media, our addictions to it, and how we are changing, how our brains are changing, how we are communicating differently, how we are engaging with others differently, based in this new media universe that is built for speed, built for a invisible battle for our attention, microseconds, optimizing every click, every interface, every word that we see on a content page. And as I'm reflecting upon how we stem the tide of all of this and try to slow down, I don't know how to do it else otherwise than looking inwards and looking at my own practice and maybe sharing that call for a bit of silence. Maybe as I was approaching this end of this season one, I needed to take one episode of silence, 1 week of silence to reflect and introduce that pause precisely, to slow down, to think about silence. It's a bit of a interesting paradox to talk about silence. But I wonder often in this world of hypermediatization, hyper noise, hyper content creation, where and how can we find, create, and protect spaces of silence inside ourselves so that we can find there the strength, the force to create the boundaries precisely between the world of noise and images and words that are bombarding us all the time and the world of silence, of inner contemplation, of meditation. It is good that there is out there a movement about mindfulness, a movement about thoughts, meditation. It's a little island for sure, but it's a valuable island to be able to go find and nurture and find a place where time passes differently. Because you can encapsulate a lot of thoughts, a lot of meditation when you create that space for yourself, however you do and whatever that means for you. Rituals and rites were two words that came to my mind when I was preparing this episode, researching it. Maybe our elders, who have a tendency to transmit their knowledge one generation to the other through stories and symbols, rites, know something about that need for a space that is bounded from the rest of the world. I do not believe that humans have evolved intrinsically from the early years of our evolution. Of course, we have created better tools. Of course, we have figured out the math and the science of atoms. Of course, we have gone to faraway places. Of course, we have looked into the very small microscopic, even atomic levels. And yet, the psychology of a human being, the rapport between the conscious part and the subconscious part, the struggle between the two, the shaping of our relationship and interfaces between each other, and the interface between our conscious and our subconscious, that has not changed. We'll develop those themes in the second season. But for today, I'm just noticing that the concept of boundary is core to humanity. It is symbolically represented in my personal meditative thinking by the stones of Stonehenge, which create a round circle of a sacred space. It is represented by the stones of the Athena temple on the Parthenon in Athens. It is represented by the chambers and sacred royal chambers of the pyramids of Egypt, the creation of a space which is out of the world, literally and symbolically. And so what is the place inside ourselves that we can create for stemming the tide of social media, for regrounding ourselves, for slowing down, for filtering the noise? And maybe this is the challenge of the next 10 years for all of us, little by little, to build, sometimes consciously, sometimes subconsciously, a certain level of boundary, a certain level of filtering out of the noise. What strikes me is that each time there was a evolution of the media technology, there is a roadmap, a phase, a cycling or phases as this new medium is absorbed by the human brain. A first phase of bewilderment and absolute awe in front of that new technology. The first time that the telephone arrived, with people imagining that the telephone would revolutionize the world, and it did in certain terms, but not in the ways that they were imagining at the time. At the time, they would imagine that people would listen in remotely to opera singing, and in some senses we did, but not over the telephone. It was over the radio that it really happened. So every new medium, every new container has a period of societal adaptation, the first phase being the awe and the magic, the second phase being the expansion of and democratization of that new medium, with more and more people adapting it, and I want to say perverting it as well, because when you expand a new medium to an entire population, by definition, that medium is going to be adopted, adapted, and used by all sorts of people with all sorts of intent, all the way from the good wishers and all the way to the ill wishers. And so when the internet arrived, and Al Gore and the authors of all of this promised the democratization of knowledge sharing and the overall increase of knowledge across the population, in some way they were right, but they were also having a blind spot on the fact that with that democratization comes manipulation. And over the years, the balancing forces of the medium itself represent all the energies, all the intents of all the actors of that new medium. And inside that new container, the mixing of the solid and good use of the new technology, the new medium, the new media format, and the more malevolent use. Maybe it is the story of humanity, after all. The understanding of the power of the atom that can be used in science and medicine for radiation therapy, and its destructive force and use in a nuclear atom bomb. The same can be said of social media. It can be used for targeted, valuable purposes and can be used for absolutely destructive power. And so when we look at the evolution of a new medium, the last phase, after the inception, then the democratization, maybe comes the phase of the maturation and the rebalancing act, and a new generation of people knowing and learning the pitfalls of that new media format. People learning that what the politician says on TV is maybe not as magical as what it appeared to be 10, 20 years ago. Maybe learning that when a politician uses television in the 1980s, it is a very different medium because the receptors are more dubious about as was being said, by opposition to when they were listening to General de Gaulle speak on TV in the 1960s. And that maturation takes time. It takes at least a decade, if not two. It takes a time of reflection between parents and kids about what is going on around the TV screen. It takes a decade or two of today's parent time and parenting time between parents and their kids to think and debate what is going on the internet. For those kids, when they will be young adults as well, to integrate their practice of social media in a different way. And that is a slow, highly personal, highly interpersonal piece of work. And that work lies upon the foundation, which is the creation of boundaries between who we are as human beings and the outside world. We will explore those themes of who we are, because beyond the economy, beyond the media sphere, beyond the technology sphere, ultimately, I truly believe that the world reflects us. And to become a little bit more philosophical, there is a reflective relationship between how we perceive the world, how we influence it, and how the world influences us. And if we are not participants in that relationship, we become the objects of the world. And if we are aware of that relationship and we take ownership, then the sense of self can bloom and flourish, and we become the subjects of the action that we can have on the world. As you can see, we started this season one of Hit Pause talking about digital bits and bytes, and we are little by little marching towards a deeper layer, which is the human layer, the consciousness and subconscious themes which have always fascinated me and that I want to share with you and reflect upon. And so I'll leave you tonight with a question, which is, are you ready for this voyage of continuing with me this exploration of the consciousness and the subconscious and the boundaries that we establish for ourselves in this world so that we can better apprehend what's happening to us, what is communicated to us, and what we accept to absorb, filter out, or let inside us? This podcast is a simple way of sharing my thoughts. It is a personal endeavor, nothing more, a way to connect. The views and opinions represented in this podcast are solely mine. There are no way, nor should they be assumed to be shared, supported, endorsed by my employer, the sponsors of this show, Anchor.fm, where it is hosted, and all the distributors thereof. You may find more information, links, pictures, videos, documents, and more, which may have been referenced in this podcast, on my website at www.uteza.com/podcast. There, it feels so much better after saying all of this. And so, it's time to part ways, at least for now. Until next time, time to say goodnight, time to hit pause.